This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Giddy hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Another night in another town, in another smoky place. Me and the band were sitting backstage. We were looking at the face of the lead singer from the opening act who had just left the stage. I saw youthful greatness in his eyes despite his age. He said, take a picture, why don't you? Many others have done the same. Yeah, I was once called Elvis Presley, but now Jackson is my name. We sat there in silence as reality set in. I had so many things to ask him, but I didn't know where to begin. God save the king. He said it's not as easy as it looks to live as royalty.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it. Worldwide to all ears around the globe, seeking knowledge, seeking insight, seeking to be initiated into the core that is the P2 fan universe, seeking musical enlightenment and some perspective from a musician standpoint in these chaotic times. From Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. How are you doing out there, folks? Thrilled to be with you as always every week. Thrilled, delighted. Phil here. How you doing? I hope the weeks have treated you well. I hope as we roll into episode 102 here. You hear what I just said? 102. That's about 2 years if you're scoring at home. Of the P2 Podcast. Nary missed a week. I think we missed a week. I want to say around the 1 year mark. I think I ran a, we skipped a week or ran a, maybe posted a, previously aired broadcast. You'll have to excuse me. I've had a hell of a cold. Oh man. It's like 34 degrees in the morning and like 88 degrees in the, afternoon. Good grief. Many of us suffering up here in North Texas as a result. I hope you're doing better. I'm just here sipping my hot coffee, trying to burn it out of my head. Goodness gracious. But not missing any gigs. Knock on wood, not missing any shows. Still mixing tracks up here at Trinidad. Just rumbling through it all. Got an interesting email here from our big fan, our man in the Midwest, Eric Albers. How you doing, Eric? He's up there in St. Louis, or outside of St. Louis, Missouri. He writes it from time to time. He brings up a valid point here, talking about private parties. Man, you're watching all this stuff in the Middle East, all these riots, freedom they want, democracy, right? What do you do when Muammar Gaddafi himself, and don't ask me how to spell that, goodness gracious, it's spelled differently every time. That'd be a great shtick as a performer. You know, Prince had that unpronounceable symbol as his name, the artist formerly known as Prince, and had the symbol. You ought to be an artist that just says, my name is, you know, Gaddafi or something like that. And just, you know, every time I see it in print, I want to make certain it's spelled differently. It's open to interpretation. I want the person writing my name down in the press or on an album or somewhere to take artistic license with my name. They are a participatory agent in my being, in my art. You spell it with a K or a C or a Q or a whatever. I'm going to do that. Just quit getting hung up on how people misspell Pritchett. Just have one T in the middle, two at the end, one at the end. Just say, you know what? It doesn't matter to me. Just spell it however you want. With a P, with a... I don't know. Open to interpretation. Gaddafi. There you go. But what to do when old Gaddafi hires you for the private party? I wonder if Gaddafi, his son, I wonder if his son knows that Philip Pritchett's private party, April. $500, I come play at his house. Now, there'd be some travel expenses involved if I went over there to Libya to play. But the reason I bring this up, I jest. You know, there's a report on, I guess it came out on WikiLeaks, that Beyonce, Usher, I think Mariah Carey, other acts like that have been brought over to play gigs for Gaddafi's son for various occasions, and had indeed paid him like $1 million. Now, I heard about this a lot years ago with Michael Jackson. You know, Jackson wouldn't tour for years. Like, man, you know, I know he's rich and all this. He's got this, but he's got this legal trouble, and you know, certainly he'd have to get out and work more. I mean, this is insane. But you come to find out later on that Jackson was, you know, frequently going over to places like Saudi Arabia and you know, some of these Middle Eastern countries with these sheiks, you know, these dictatorial rich guys. Throwing like a birthday party for their 9-year-old kid, and just Michael Jackson playing and paying him, you know, $1 million or $2 million, and so that kind of came out later on that, man, this is maybe kind of how he's helping supplement his odd life. So you do have that going on. We did a podcast a while back with our great friend Kurt South. You remember Kurt South out there, podcast listeners, talking about private parties and how there was. Numerous stories, just to recap a couple. I think it was a Sony Christmas party. Now, this was back in the big 90s, you know, the tech era. But one of these tech, you know, tech bubble companies at the peak, you know, had everybody like at this theme park. And ladies and gentlemen, Merry Christmas from Sting, you know, and just Sting comes running out there. And there's all kinds of stuff evidently you have to sign to say, well, you know, you can't tell anybody he was here and can't tell anybody what we paid him and, you know, but those are big dollar items. I mean, Sting would have to sell out an arena to make, you know, $200,000-$300,000 a night. And here he can just go play an hour set in you know, maybe $500,000 or something like that. So, man, it's like the old saying that I learned from my mentor, Spencer Starnes, down there in Austin, Texas. You know, they're musicians. I said, what do you mean they're musicians? He said, hey, if you pay them, they're going to show up. I'm reminded of that so often in this business. If you pay them, they're going to show up. So that's kind of what goes on here. Jackson playing private parties over there in the Middle East, staying, you know, here. I remember my brother telling a story about an Anheuser-Busch Budweiser shindig they had at the Georgia Dome. Or where do the Falcons play over there in Georgia? He's going to the buffet line. They had a stage over there. Just goodbye, Norma Jean. He kind of looks up. Here's Elton. Elton's playing. Elton's cashing a check. So no one is immune to the private party, especially yours truly, Phil. But unlike so many artists who don't want to talk about private parties, who don't want to say they do it, who don't want to you know, admit that that's what they do sometimes here and there, I take the exact opposite approach. I celebrate it. I embrace it. I love it. Those are the types of things I want to play. But pretty interesting stuff. Eric Albers reminding us, pointing out, you know, and asking the question, where do you draw the line, maybe, you know, if I get a call from Gaddafi to go over there and play, pick up $1 million, what would you do, Phil? God, that's tough to say. Actually, it's not tough to say. I go right over there and get my $1 million. What, are you kidding me? Goodness gracious. I don't know. Maybe I'll let him, you know, maybe wear like an American flag jacket or something like that. Stick it to the man. Of course, he'd send my head home in a box, probably. I wouldn't want to do that. But I don't know, man. You know, I almost had a private party in, where was that? Mozambique. A fan, longtime fan, was working over there in the oil industry and was like, man, you ought to get over here to Mozambique and play. You know, we got some armored cars and stuff like that to drive you in. I was like, oh, man, really? He was a pilot. So he was like, yeah, I'll get you over there, no problem. That's about as close as I've come to doing a truly dangerous international show. So call me if you have a international show out there for us, 817-733-5256, international. Or just email me, phil@philippritchett.com. Well, more bad news for the music touring industry. We were talking the last several weeks about declining ticket sales. This from the... The Wall Street Journal, talk about Live Nation really having a hard time. You know, the big company owns all these venues out there. Michael Rapinoe, he's the chief executive of, you know, they say it was a depressing year, noting that they sold 10% fewer tickets in 2010 than in 2009, and ticket sales were down just across the board. Cash flow, indeed, fell 35% in the fourth quarter of 2010 to $56.8 million. That didn't mean much to me, I don't know, for the year. And 15%. I don't know what these numbers mean. But regardless, they're lower, man. Ticket sales way down. And they're all holding their breath for bands like Kings of Leon to start touring again. Oh, man. If you're counting on Kings of Leon to pull in tickets, I don't know, dude. A good band, sure, but goodness gracious. They're going to sit there and pack these arenas around here forever? I don't know, man. I don't know if I'm buying. I don't know if I'm buying any Live Nation stock. Ongoing troubles of the touring industry. I still really haven't gotten over talking to my my old high school, going to talk to the high school kids about the business and my career, etc. A few weeks ago, I mentioned on the podcast, and talking about going to concerts to them, and just how when I was in high school, that was just the thing you did. You paid $10 to go sit on the lawn at the shed, you know, and we just watched whoever came through, man, Dylan, Clapton, whoever, the old guys, the new guys, whoever. It just wasn't that expensive to go to a concert. Yeah, and just very few of them talked about going, talked about the urge to go, the need to go. A few of them had been to see Gaga and Kings of Leon and stuff, but maybe one concert a year was about all any of them had been to. Whereas when I was in middle school, high school, and we just begged to go. Like I said, we didn't want to show up Monday morning and not have the T-shirt and not have gone to the gig. There was nowhere to get the shirt the day after the concert. There was nowhere to, you know, hear clips of the show or to watch it on video, unlike there is now. You know, you can, you know, I was like, man, you ought to go to U2. I kind of harken back a few. I mean, U2 certainly isn't hurting for ticket sales this last time around. But it was the All You Can't Leave Behind tour, I don't know, 2000, 2002. And I'd seen there, they'd already released their DVD for that, them doing the show at the Fleet Center in Boston. And it was just amazing, man. I just watched the whole the whole show in awe, just at home on DVD, man. Just great sound, lights. You watch the whole show, like, man, I love what they did with this song. They rearranged this and the staging, and it was so cool. And you had a little camera in Bono's glasses, so you were watching the crowd in some of the shots. Really, really well done and fascinating, great. And then my friend said, hey, man, even better, they're actually coming to play. I was living in Nashville at the time, and a friend of mine had tickets to the show in Atlanta. He said, man, they're not great seats. They're kind of up behind the stage. But, you know, let's go, man. Let's go. Come on. We got to go. And I'm thinking, man, from Nashville to Georgia to Atlanta is about 5 hours, something like that, 4 or 5 hours. I said, how much is the ticket? He's like, $75. And I'm just like, geez, we're going to drive 10 hours round trip, $75. I'm sitting up there behind the nosebleed. And you know what? It's already a great show. It's already one of the best shows I've ever seen. Granted, I saw it in my own living room, but man, it was a big, enriching experience. And I don't know if it could I don't think I would have been surprised or more impressed. And like, oh, I saw it at home, but then I was even more impressed with the band, more impressed with their show, having gone to it myself, maybe a little bit. But there certainly would have been more urgency for me to go to that show, don't you think? If I hadn't seen it or heard it or seen pictures or anything, I'd just been like, man, I got to go experience this for myself. You know, sort of a undercurrent in the NFL and pro sports is kind of like that. Certainly no problem as of yet filling arenas and things. But certainly up here in North Texas, when Jerry Jones built the new Jerry World Stadium and he put the 80-yard video screen out there, he's been very open talking about that, saying, man, you know, we've got to compete with the home experience, which is kind of bizarre. But I wonder, man, if concert attendance, maybe even pro sports attendance, maybe not at the highest level, just a Cowboys game at Texas Stadium, that's not going to hurt for tickets as much, just like the Rolling Stones aren't going to hurt to sell tickets as much when they come to town. But once you get down the scale a little bit to some smaller bands, maybe some smaller market NFL teams, if they're just going to have trouble. And I think that it already is when the economy gets bad, selling tickets. And you can blame it on the economy, you know, in this Wall Street Journal article, Michael Rapinoe is always like, well, it's kind of a blip. The next year's we're going to get way back up there, you know, once the economy picks up. But I wonder, man, just from talking to younger people, some of the guys who come in here in the studio, Our man Seth Jones, who just did his second record here, another great record by him, still mixing here at Trinidad. Hello, Seth. You know, he kind of, I can't remember what show he went to. He kind of goes, yeah, I went to a show once. Or I was like, what? You've only been to one concert? Here's this young guy, a big music fan. He kind of shrugged and goes, yeah, you know, I'll never go again. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, man, I had to pay $20 to park. I had to pay $30 to go in. A beer was $6. It was all right, man. I mean, I don't know. I'd already kind of watched the show from another city on YouTube, and I don't know. I was like, man, what the hell am I doing here? How come I'm putting up with all this? Standing in line for the bathroom and, you know, just getting crushed, you know, standing room only. He's like, you know, what was I doing here? And man, I'll tell you what, I think that's very telling, what the younger people maybe think about going to a show, you know? We used to think it was awesome to just go to the Texas Jam for about $6 and stand out on the football field in 105-degree heat in the Cotton Bowl. About halfway through the show, they come out with the fire hose, just kind of hose off the crowd as Ted Nugent takes the stage in a loincloth. Oh, man, that was entertainment, folks. Nowadays, man, you're home with your perfect digital sound, digital video on your 52-inch monitor, listening to it in surround sound, watching a concert, you know, that took place somewhere. Then it's coming to town next week. All right, man, now you're going to cough up $150 to go. You're kind of like, eh, you know, I saw it. I thought it was great. You know? Maybe that's a wave of the future. Maybe I can just, instead of playing 100 dates a year like the full band does, I'll just pick a great venue, maybe go down here to, the Granada Theater, light it. Just get everybody who wants to actually go, just give away tickets or $5. Just, hey, everybody go to the Granada. We'll get every fan in there one night only, once a year. And we'll do a show, man. We'll do reinterpretations of Pritchett's songs, rearrangements, have a horn section, backup singers, da-da-da-da-da. We'll do this show, man. We'll just film it. It'll look great, sound great, offer new perspective on all kinds of stuff we do. Then we'll have a DVD out there you can buy for, you know, $10-$20, something like that, or download it on iTunes. Or just watch it on YouTube and say, oh, man, I saw Phil's show. He looks like he's looking great. Great stuff. And just kind of live like that, you know. Don't go out and play all these dates, trying to get, you know, a few $100 here and there. Somehow, you know, make it to where you play one show like that, then you try to produce records and play private parties, etc. One show, film it, make it look great, let it live in infamy, right? I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong. Phil at philpritchett.com. Thanks for listening, folks. A little insight there, a little business news from the world we live in. Well, man, we are going back to my good friend Max Hartman, my old bandmate from high school, an actor who has been in L.A. the last several years, acting, you know, commercials, films, all kinds of stuff. And he's had all kinds of great experiences out there, good and bad, in Los Angeles. He's going to be in here talking about the L.A. scene, man, trying to make it as an actor out there, talking about his double life as a Max Fontaine lounge singer act that he had going out there, playing gigs, doing a Sinatra kind of thing, and all kinds of fun stuff. And talking about what he sees in the film industry and how it compares to the music industry, changes in digital media, and all of that. Coming up here in our second segment, Max Hartman. Stay tuned.
Dad, I was just tired of living in Tennessee. Voice was undeniably of the man he claimed to be. He wore a worn out t-shirt.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here with you, as I always am, on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth. Come record at the studio, 817-733-5256, or shoot me an email, phil@philpritchett.com. Broadcasting to you today in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it. My good childhood friend, former bandmate, actor, song and dance man, Max Hartman is here.
Hey, Phil.
Dallas acting legend, L.A., everywhere. We've been talking the last couple weeks about our old band, about Max's experience in L.A., acting, being in commercials, just making money for, 30 seconds of work on a Circuit City commercial, all kinds of great stuff. Of course, there's a flip side of that coin, and as we were flipping that coin last week, you were talking about the your act. You started the Sinatra thing with
right.
Max Fontaine
L.A., singing some. So you just have tracks, and you'd sing the Sinatra songs and do your act.
Yeah, I treated it like
a send-up.
Yeah, like I was the world's greatest lounge performer.
Yes.
Crooner extraordinaire.
A throwback from the old school.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you have a cigarette and a martini?
Oh, yeah. I started off probably, I mean, I used to get to the end of the set and be hoarse because I would smoke on stage and drink whiskey and just.
Sure.
I tried to really do the full Rat Pack deal without the
you
rest of the
rap. Like
with no comedy.
It's like Val Kilmer being Jim Morrison. You know, like he was drunk for 2 years.
Yeah, kind of.
You know?
I think it did affect me for sure. My
Max
drinking level.
He's in too deep, man.
I was in too deep.
You're into character so deep, man.
So
you were smoking. You can't smoke in those clubs anymore, right?
Oh, this one place you could. The place I started out at.
They didn't
care.
And
I treated it like, hey, I'm on stage.
Right.
I can smoke. You know?
Right.
This is right before those laws, I think, went into effect, or at least at this place.
Right.
But yeah, I used to just drink whiskey and sing all these old tunes and act as if, well, of course, what's wrong with all you people that aren't getting this? And it was kind of a slightly disgruntled lounge performer.
Part of its charm was it when people laugh at me. It was a funny dick.
I think so. Yeah, I would pick on people.
Hey, you by the bar. Yeah, just kind of, you know, just
make
it
another.
Two, or whatever. Would you just, was it more of an act? Was there some interaction with the audience and stuff?
Oh, yeah. I would just kind of interact with them and BS and give them a hard time and back and forth. Some nights were better than others. But I got a steady little amount of money from these guys at this first place and then started getting bookings for weddings. I did a biker baby shower out in the valley.
Oh, really?
I had the weirdest gigs, yeah. Some backyard. I mean, it was the most, it looked like Edward Scissorhands, you know that movie?
Yeah. The trees
everything
being held up.
Everything looked the same. Yeah. Every house looked exactly the same, except one house had 12 Harley Davidsons parked in the driveway for this baby shower that I was singing at.
Ah, yes. The parents.
Big time.
Yeah.
So the parents are bikers, and anyway, I did all kinds of gigs.
We're getting Max Fontaine showing up here.
That's right. So that was fun, and I kind of got a little burnt, but was able to make a little living while I was out there. You know?
But was it the kind of deal where, like, man, I can't take this anywhere. I mean, is that kind of what starts?
Kind of, yeah. Everyone's like, you got to go to Vegas. Why aren't you in Las Vegas? I was like, because I don't want to go be stuck in Las Vegas and be lounge.
And there you're in line behind 50 other Sinatra guys, right?
I'm assuming.
Yeah, you know? Probably so.
Yeah, that was the Sinatra deal was always my fallback. I thought, if I don't make it in rock and roll with my music, or I don't make it as an actor, then I'll go sing standards, you know, with a band.
Yeah, be a big band guy.
Because I could be an older dude doing that and be plenty, you know, make some money and have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not be trying to make it, you know.
Man, it's kind of like, you know, me and my band express frustration around here. I mean, that's where a lot of the dollars go in live entertainment is the, the example I told people a couple weeks ago, we're playing the Little Room at House of Blues and, man, the big room sold out tonight. Man, who's playing there? No Quarter, the Zeppelin band, and with an Appetite for Destruction opening up, and
the Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, you see the dudes with the Slash hat backstage. What's going on, man? same old crap, you know.
I pretended to be Slash another night.
Yeah, but I'm like, but you know that those guys' first gig, they all just pocket a bunch of cash. But it's you can't take it anywhere. I mean, unless you're kind of like, man, how you do it for a few years, you're probably starting to be like, man, you know.
Oh, I have.
Was there some sense of that with the?
Oh, I mean, I have a distant cousin named Patrick Williams who, back in the 70s, he composed TV theme songs for tons of stuff. Streets of San Francisco.
Oh, I never heard
Mary
this.
Tyler Moore
I never heard
show,
this. Yeah, yeah.
All those shows in the back then. And he did
right.
Film scores, etc. Well, he worked with Sinatra. Sinatra's last two albums. Those duets records where he sang with Bono and everything.
Sure, yeah.
He conducted the orchestra.
Is that right? Wow.
So my dad is all on me. He's like, you got to get in touch with Pat Williams. You got to have him hear you or come see you do your Sinatra act because he will flip and he's going to help you.
Yeah.
You think, I guess.
Right.
So I make my way finally through some phone calling and emailing, get out to his home and his studio, and he sits there.
Is he in California?
Yeah, he's in California.
Okay. Yeah.
So he literally does the old put the CD in, listen to a few bars, and then kind of go to the next one and kind of listen to a few bars and go, all right. Listen to a few bars of the next one and going, okay, I get it. Yeah. He goes, well, you sound just like him. You sound just like him. He goes, that's either an asset or a liability, depending on what you want to do with it.
Yeah.
And he was no help. He just said, well, good luck. Get a manager and record some stuff and see how it goes. And I'm like, well, I already knew that. I thought, you know, family.
I'm going to introduce you to Frank's old engineer.
Yeah, something like that. Not at nothing.
Yeah.
He barely let me stay for lunch. And then Wasn't even sure if I was really related to him. That was kind of a L.A. in a nutshell. When your own distant cousin is like, do I know
who
you?
Who are you again?
Who are you again?
Yeah, right.
Why should I care?
Everyone's looking for a favor, some help or something, you know, well, in the entertainment business.
The other thing, and this is one thing I'll say really positive about Texas, about really anywhere else in this country.
Yeah, yeah. You've seen a lot of it.
New York and L.A.
Yeah.
Los Angeles, almost everybody out there has got their own band, or they used to, or they want to, or they're in there, or they're an actor, or they're a
director, and they got a script. They
all got something, yeah, they're writing something, and so there's almost no audience left, because
everyone's selling something. Yeah, everyone's
on stage.
Everyone
in the room is already kind of looking at each other like, okay, well, I could do that.
Or, right, right.
It's just a town devoid of an audience.
That's right. That's true. That's interesting.
So, I mean, you know, when I performed, you know, hundreds of times. I did that Sinatra act, for example, several nights a week all over town, you know, perform for some name people you'd recognize and all that.
Yeah, kind of wander into the club.
And they were like, that guy's the producer of Crash. You know, he just won an Oscar this year and he loves
you. Yeah.
He would bring people in to see me and I'm thinking, well, then how does it get better than that?
That's right.
Well, that guy who just won an Oscar for Crash is trying to figure out if he's ever going to get another movie made.
That's right.
Everyone in the town is like, I did do that, but
that was yesterday.
What is next?
Yeah. Or they might have made that movie 2 years ago, and you know,
right.
Just
what's
now.
He been doing since?
That's right. That's right.
So there's a lot of that out there. So there's something to be said for, you know, those of you out there doing your gigging around town and thinking that if only I could go out to Hollywood, then maybe I could really get noticed. Well, you know, you might be just as well off to just keep where you're at.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and just be
love the one you with.
That's right. Is that, you know, I always see so many parallels, and this is my perspective, is that the movie industry, the film industry, seems to move, at least on the technological side, a few years or so behind the music business.
Yep.
What I mean by that is, and this is what everybody knows already, but I don't hear many people really actually say it. I feel like, you know, we had CDs and DVDs for a long time, and then I still had VHS tape. Like it was still you had tape. You know, I'm like, why can't we have the movie on here? This seems silly. But it took a long time for the DVDs to take hold. And then we kind of had the label system in music fall apart. It was like, man, it's just every man for himself. And there's no upfront advances and stuff. Mm-hmm. But at that time, Tom Cruise was still getting $20 million a movie and Jim Carrey and life was just great. And now it seems like the studio system's starting to go down.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like...
What's happening to the...
Yeah, the music, but it's a little slower. I mean, you know, everyone's like, well, man, everybody's got GarageBand on their laptop. Everyone can make a great sound on a record. It's been like that for years. But you're only just now starting to see flip video cameras, you know, iDVD. People going, man, he made this whole movie with a $500 digital camera, HD. Yep. I mean, it looks great to me, shoot, you know. And I feel like maybe is the movie industry even in for more change than it's already seen?
Absolutely. I just, the biggest project I probably worked on out there was a film. A friend of mine, Danny Boudet, he saw my act at a wedding in Mexico.
Fontaine?
Fontaine with a V.
Fontaine.
Anyway, that was just the stage name. So I'm down and singing at my friend's wedding in Mexico. I buddy up with this guy, Danny.
Uh-huh.
He went to American Film Institute, which is like the big film school. And he came out of there, and it was about 3 years later. He was like, I'm going to make a feature. I got some money together. He got an investor, $1 million.
Yeah.
We filmed on film, on the same film stock that they had filmed Transformers on. They had extra film, and we used that. And,
Sure.
All old school film, editing, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
His classmate, this guy named Drake Doremus, goes off with a video camera, like a, you know, very consumer brand camera with no crew, and goes and films this movie called Douchebag. I know, right?
Yeah, my interest is already peaked. Should I have heard of that movie?
I don't know. Well, it went to Sundance last year.
Oh,
so he is a prime example of two film grads from the same film program
who arrived at different conclusions.
Yeah, my buddy, you know, is going old school, akin to going into a big studio and really recording it right. And this other kid was in his garage and came up with something and he went to Sundance and we didn't. You know?
Right.
And
Sundance, of course, gets so many submissions. And they let in like 200 out of like 2,500 or something just crazy.
Oh, yeah. There was only 16 feature-length American films
in Sundance.
So he was one of the 16.
Douchebag made it.
Yeah, Douchebag made it. And he's already invited back this year.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I'll be darned, man. Wow. Well, that maybe shows that, I don't know, what does that say about the industry or about the future of it?
I don't know. It's kind of scary because, to me, in my mind, Danny looked every bit of the up and coming next guy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Filmmaker. And he worked harder than I've never seen anybody work as hard as that guy has worked in my life, especially even out there. And there's a lot of motivated people out
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that guy
just hit the streets. Yeah.
I mean, just did everything right. Everything
right. Never slept.
Right.
Yeah.
And this other kid comes along. And it felt like that for a lot of people, I'm sure.
Sure.
You're in bands, yeah. You're writing songs, and you're doing it all the right way. And then some guy comes along with a certain kind of haircut.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, this guy's the greatest.
And he's selling out, you know, the arena. You know, and you're just like, man,
what happened to writing a good song or, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
I'm not trying to bag on
right.
this guy, but it just seems like he kind of willy-nilly went out there and he had his actors improvise the whole thing. And, so I think there's going to be a lot more of that mumblecore-y kind of indie filmmaking. I think the studio pictures are just going to get worse and worse and more dumbed down. And
yeah, just sequels and
yeah, I mean, that's all
Aquaman,
we're left with is
4 and just anything with a tie to the past. Just,
oh, yeah. Comic book movies.
They're remaking the Flintstones. Like, didn't they already do that with John Goodman? They're doing it again, you know, with Ryan Reynolds or something. You're just like, I mean, you're just like, can't they come with any? Why? And you think that's a result of
I think they can come
up with. They need a sure bet, though, for the money, I guess. It's just,
all these executives have to sign off on it. Too many people scared to. Everyone's got their finger up in the air trying to see which way the wind's blowing.
Right, right.
And unless they hear from three different people that this is the next thing, nobody wants to touch it.
That's right, that's
right. You know? Show like Mad Men we were talking about.
Yeah, uh-huh.
AMC, that's one of the rare shows where they let all the creative people handle the creative.
Right.
And the AMC is not as big of a studio and a, you know, a network-backed thing.
This is what works. They're kind of like, well, I don't know, we're trying this.
Yeah, why don't you guys be in charge of your show? And so they let them do it, and that's why it's so good.
Yeah, it's great. I've only recently gotten into it, started renting the seasons on Netflix. I mean, me and my wife just been watching them at night, really enjoying it. But I was struck watching Mad Men. It's just, I just go, man, they just, it's like hearing a really great double album that someone does on, you know, like maybe these Wilco albums or something. You're just like, man, people just don't make albums like that anymore. And there's a reason for that. And you're like, well, they can do it. But you wonder if just nobody does it or nobody can do it or nobody, there's no demand for it. I gave you the example that Mad Men has an estimated viewership of like 1 million people a week, whereas Jersey Shore has 10 million.
God.
And Jersey Shore, they shoot for nothing on a handheld. Oh. They pay all those actors, you know, $50,000. And say, okay, shut up. You know.
Yeah.
And Mad Men, you've got these, it all takes place in 1960, 1961.
A lot of real artists working
on
that.
Yeah, it's just like, well, you know, it's hard to. It's hard to get your head around as guys like us who enjoy the theatrics of a show like Mad Men or making a record in a big studio.
Well, it just seems like it took more time and effort and talent and experience to make something like that.
Right, right.
You know, and a lot of this pop candy stuff, you know, whether it's a film or whether it's music, you know, another interesting thing is that the music biz.
Uh-huh.
Has had all of that file sharing stuff that I don't think is nearly as prevalent in films and television.
Well, that's kind of in my radar as far as the film industry lagging behind. I wonder how far we are from that, dude. As computer speeds pick up, just
right.
Man, I downloaded the new
whatever.
Wes Anderson movie in about 1 second, dude, on this website. Just what? I mean, if it's in digital form anywhere in the world, you can just get it.
You can get it for free.
Yeah,
I guess then we're all going to be who's going to make money?
Not only that, when you download it, man, now I have this 51-inch HD monitor. It looks and sounds as good as going to the theater. I'm not even going to go buy a ticket, you know?
Right.
At what point do you get to that? Do you think it's headed that way?
I probably is, you know?
I mean, what do you think?
I think we're going to end up in just like in that movie, was it WALL-E, where everyone's just sitting in a chair with just a video screen or Idiocracy, one of those things?
Yeah.
Where the color is red. Everyone loves red. And then you change, you pick a color for your...
Yeah.
I'm a guy that still likes to go get a newspaper out of a newspaper machine and sit there and drink a cup of coffee and read the newspaper.
There you go. Well,
if I've already looked on my phone in the morning and seen.
You're Max Bontaine, though, man. You're old school.
That's right, baby.
You know, another thing that distresses me greatly is people say, man, but it's great that any artist doesn't need to go through some big studio with money.
You can go worldwide.
Anybody can make a record now. Anybody can make a video. The chains are off. Let creativity and freedom ring. But I feel like all we get is just people sitting on the toilet on YouTube just going, oh, isn't this great?
Yeah.
And Jersey Shore. And I'm just like, you know, has someone made The Graduate? Has someone made Mad Men on their flip video? I'm like, all they're making is garbage.
I know.
Just trancy
tricks, you know,
trancy loops, hip hop thing. Made it on a, you know.
Yeah, I think YouTube's the equivalent of kind of the circus freak show, you know, or something, you know.
Yeah, and
modern era kind of, hey, look at this guy balance his bottle on his head.
You wonder if you would think in some ways the chains are off of the art world, film and music. Therefore, we're about to see an explosion of a renaissance of creativity
and
stuff.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But I don't know. You kind of go back to like Michelangelo. You know,
he had to work for reasons.
And he was being funded by, you know, the Vatican or the Medici or someone were paying him. He was selected. He was the best in the world to paint the Sistine Chapel or carve the statue. You know, they didn't just say, hey!
Oh, yeah. Shakespeare wrote for the queen.
Yeah, that was right. He was commissioned because he was the best. And so he worked to achieve that. And there's a natural filter there that gives the guy some validity and some wherewithal to go about and do something good. And they didn't say, hey, carve a statue of a naked guy, bring it to the Vatican. We're going to pick one to put it in front of the church. It's just kind of like, you'd end up with just God knows what. I don't know. Nothing good.
Mm-mm.
So I don't know if that's where we're headed, Max.
Phil, I don't either.
Well, that's what this show's about.
It troubles me.
That's what this show's about, trying to navigate through these waters in uncertain artistic times.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Well, oh, man.
I wonder if we'll live to see the end of it. You know, just some sort of resolution here in the next several years.
I think ultimately I do believe that it comes around, you know, that we go through cycles of, you know, we're about to probably have a new shift coming along here very soon.
I think
we'll
so.
See.
I remember just, it's always darkest before the dawn kind of deal. So hopefully that's the case, man. But hey, one thing's for sure, yours truly, Max Hartman, and Phil Pritchett here will be out there acting, writing, doing anything we can to entertain. We might be in your backyard playing a show or something. You never know. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Let me know what you think of the podcast. As always, folks, love hearing from you. Max Hartman, my lifelong dear friend, is here.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks for sharing all of your life, your experiences, and your memories about the old band and everything. It's been a lot of fun for me sitting here the last few weeks.
Same here.
Outstanding. Well, man, we're going to go over to the vault here, grab a record, and we'll talk about it next.
Here in the bar, the boys like to have fun. There's a wager lost and an argument won. There's a stonewashed damsel on a junk food run.
Should have kept a mouth shut. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting to you worldwide in high definition audio or something quite like it. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me 817-733-5256 to book the full band. We'll come play at your house, your ranch, your party, your wedding, anywhere. Anywhere in the contingent United States. Or if it pays enough, overseas, the Middle East, Africa, South America. You let me know. phil@philpritchett.com. We'll come play a show for you or come record bands here at Trinidad World Recording Studios. We've done so much great stuff here lately, back there in the new Pro Tools HD room. Huge, huge fun being had back there. Seth Jones, Brian Joyner, Casey Berry's been by. All kinds of folks dropping by recording. Jeff King from the Notorious Gringos has been here. So many people recording, mixing, always stuff going on here. Give me a call. Come make your record. Well, speaking of great records being made, you know I love Elvis Costello. Oh, man, nerdy, quirky, all the things that, oh, you know, hardcore country people get scared about sometimes. Just a weird British guy. But, man, I really got into Kelly Costello over the years. It's no secret there. We've done some other of his records here. His first album, maybe, My Aim Is True. Well, he made all kinds of crazy records in his day. A country album. What was that? Almost Blue, I think it was. Is that right? Was it Almost Blue? I think that's right. His country album, Nashville. Anyway, he has done all kinds of weird stuff. jazz, you know, soft, folky stuff. He did something with the Brodsky Quartet, sort of a chamber music kind of deal. But man, he returned to form here. I think this was in the early 90s. He gets back together with The Attractions, his old first band. Early 90s to make a real powerhouse rock and roll record. The result is this record, one of my Costello favorites, called Brutal Youth. Just a great Costello title there. That lead-in track here was Kinder Murder. He always has these blood and guts kind of titles. Like, you know, oh, geez, what is it called? Blood and Chocolate was one of his albums. Blood and Chocolate, another one of Costello's albums. Mighty Like a Rose. Now, those are titles. You know what I'm saying? You don't. That's not just a title. Like, here's my new album. It's called Today or Here We Go or something. I don't know, just something like that. Like something you'd say in everyday conversation. They're like, what's the name of this song, Elvis? He's like, this one's called Tokyo's Storm Warning, Kinder Murder. But this is one of my favorite Costello songs here. Check out the changes on this, the chord progressions of where this song goes. Just, this is great stuff here. If someone came in here with this song today, I'd fall down on the ground and start crying. Sulky Girl from Brutal Youth, Elvis Costello.
A wedding ring her sister lent to throw them off the scent. Just let them guess, it's what they expect. Who in the world has bitten her neck? She's discovered wearing last night's dress. The carnal and cunning she couldn't express. Who do you think she's trying to impress? Better hold your tongue, although you've never been that strong. I'm sorry to say that I knew all along. You're no match for that sucky girl. She left her European town before she let the family down. Couldn't stand the massacre game, so she dyed her hair, adopted another name. With the evidence of passing out stamped on her hand, she glows in the dark. He thinks she's from another planet, so I think you better hold your tongue, although you've never been that strong. I'm sorry to say.
By blackening her name, she
Costello, man, howling at the moon, sulky girl. The dynamics. Did you hear it? Just slow and slow. She wears a wedding ring, a sister left. Greatness. Then it just me thinking it can't go anywhere else. Sulky girl. That's all you. Oh, man, just rocking. Saw him at the backyard outside of Austin down there years and years ago. He did that song. I'd heard it a couple times. It was kind of an album cut, kind of a lesser-known tune. I remember going online that night and going, man, what was that song? I'd heard it. Sulky Girl, Brutal Youth. Costello at his mightiest, man, right there in his later years. Well, this next song, a great concept here. This is Hell. You know, I always wonder what happens when you die, right? Something we all talk about. We don't want to think about going to hell. Goodness gracious. But Costello knows what hell is. It's a place where the song My Favorite Things are playing again and again. But it's by Julie Andrews and not by John Coltrane. That's what hell to Costello is. This is hell. Tell me if you agree.
This is hell. This is hell. I am sorry to tell you it never gets better or worse. But you'll get used to it after a spell. But heaven is hell in reverse. The bruiser spun a hula hoop while I'm a bomb and preening foul. The neon eye of nightclub flickers on and off and finally blew out. The irritating jingle of the belly dancing phony Turkish girls. The eerie glare of ultraviolet, perfect and alert. This is hell, I am sorry to tell you it never gets better or worse.
It never gets better or worse.
But you'll get used to it after a spell.
Try to shoot. It's not the torment of the flames that Julie Andrews and not by John Coltrane. Endless balmy breezes and perfect sunsets frame. Vintage wine for breakfast and naked starlets floating in champagne. All the passions of you, you are tranquilized and tamed. You may think it looks familiar, though you may know it by another name.
This is hell.
Sorry to tell you, it never gets better or worse.
It never gets better or worse.
But you'll get used to it after a spell.
This is Hell, Elvis Costello. So provocative, so thoughtful. Boy, man, you gotta have that intelligence in rock and roll. You know, you really get around like reading books about Dylan and John Lennon, and these guys are intelligent, man. They think mighty thoughts. They think about stuff, and it works its way into the music. And man, I just get the impression some of these bands today, I'm just not convinced of the intelligence of some of these people. I don't think they've read a whole lot, I don't know. They're interviewing some dude from some band. I'm like, he's more often just some, I don't know. He doesn't show me much, a lot of them. But not Costello, man. He's thought a lot about this stuff. What is hell? There you go. Well, that is the show for this week, folks. So much fun. Thanks to Max Hartman for dropping by. Good stuff there, man. Talking about the film industry, the music industry. Comparisons between the two, his experience in LA. Thanks so much, Max, for dropping by. Surely he'll be back. And he still needs to tell that U2 story, man, about the time he hung out with U2 all night. Fantastic. Maybe we can get that out of him next week. We'll have to see. We're going to leave you here with London's Brilliant Parade. I've been to London a couple times. Man, this song just captures the whole feeling of walking around in London, all the sights and the sounds and the smells of an old city in the UK, man. Costello here. Remember to call me, 817-733-5256, to book the full band, or email me, phil@philippritchard.com. Come record at Trinidad World Recording Studios. Again, my thanks to Max Hartman and everybody for being a part of the show today. London's Brilliant Parade with Costello will take us out today. We'll see y'all next week on the podcast. This is Phil Pritchard here. Thanks for listening. Much tougher.
Outside my window, not long before sleep arrives, they come with their sirens, and they sweep away all the boys, busy draining the joy from their lives. They never said their prayers out loud, and while I'm dreaming, there's a passing motor car that broadcasts a popular song. A girl appears to be saying, do you think that I'm gonna go far? Just look at me, I'm having the time of my life, or something quite like it. When I'm walking out and over London's Brilliant Parade, she's one of those girls that you just can't place. Guilty desire in such an innocent face, but of course they knew that when they cast.
Occidental Bazaar. We used to call Oxford Street. Now the bankrupt souls in the city are finally tasting defeat. Don't look at me having the time of my life, or something quite like it. When I'm walking out and over in London's brilliant parade. When I'm walking out and over in London's brilliant parade. From the gates of St. Mary's, there were horses in Olympia. And a trolleybus in Fulham Broadway. The lions and the tigers in Regent's Park couldn't pay their way. And now they're not the only ones at the Hammersmith Palace in Kensington and Camden Town. There's a part that I used to play. The lovely D. Rahmer is really